They halt on a ridge of sandstone and grit, the headlights plunging out into darkness. He yanks on the brake and shuts off the car. The temper foam relaxes. The doors unlock. Tipper steps into a strikingly cool breeze. Her first tentative steps nearly spill her down a ghostly chasm, ragged walls of rock made spectral by the moon. Luke grabs her arm.
Easy.
Don't worry. It's not as far as it looks. The night makes everything seem weird. The night does indeed. His silhouette seems strange and huge beside her, hewn from rock.
Out there.
Luke's arm extends.
Below those two bright stars.
The shapes she makes out are distant but distinct. Four dark squares rising up like buttes, and one long mesa of flat-topped shadow.
Tipper's first impression is of a holy sight, some natural wonder sanctified by the rites of the Navajo, those restless neighbors of her own ancestral people.
But the moonlight, strengthening with a suddenness peculiar to desert climes, dispels the illusion. Those are buildings, four silos and a compound, with not a single window to vary the dark walls.
Air Force,
Luke says.
Testing site. See that long flat building? My granddad used to work there.
He was a pilot? Luke shakes his head.
Engineer. Mathematician. Data crunching, modeling, that kind of thing.
Tipper knows where this is going. And he got fired. Luke's eyes are on the distant buildings.
Not exactly. You know how many people work this site now?
Zero.
Know why it's so dark? Because no one needs any light. The entire place is run by machines. Machines on site. Machines on network. A guy like my grandpa, it's not like he got fired. It's more like his whole industry ceased to exist.
Tipper considers the expanse below, thinking about what Luke has said. Machines to do the work, and machine to guard the machines.
Any person trespassing on that turf will quickly find himself a target of some of the world's most sophisticated perimeter drones. Even with the best night vision gear, a human would be helpless against their full-spectrum scanning. Of course, the drones don't actually injure anyone. They have no need for such sloppy tactics.
What about your parents? She says. The rest of your family? Luke sucks in night air.
That's next.
And he guides her on, through shapeless towns, down nameless roads. Actually, the streets here do have names. Spanish names. Navajo names. But no one cares. To the cars and their riders, it's all just instructions. Left, right, straight. 10 meters. 2 miles. Eventually, something looms ahead, massive and broken. Luke tells her to stop.
That building? That was where my great-grandfather worked. Back in the 20th century, putting lawnmowers together. Then all those jobs went overseas. Then they came back, except they were being done by computer scientists. Then those jobs went overseas. And then all the jobs went away forever. So we did it.
He laughs.
We finally achieved true global equality.
As they drove on, the names of the streets become increasingly irrelevant until Tipper no longer even notices the towns. It's all jumbled together, geography, history, family, a random walk of turns and dead ends.
Over here, this was where my grandma used to work. A library. Can you believe they used to have physical libraries? And over here, this is where the college was. I had a friend whose dad worked there. Guess what he taught?
game design, and pedagogical process. Whoops, taught himself right out of a job.
In a downtown where the all-night restaurants twinkle with animated ads, Luke urges Tipper to get out and walk.
That's where the old Walmart used to be. My dad worked there as a cashier. Then in the stockroom, then as a greeter. They all thought Walmart was the epitome of evil back then. There's the salon where my sister used to work. They're still open, but they're cutting back. Get it? No, but seriously, all they employ now is a couple of touchers. Know what that is?
Growing up as a tomboy with three uber male brothers, Tipper hasn't had a chance to learn much about the ways of hair salons.
Okay. Luke explains. So the machines do all the work, right? There's a whole line of robots to do the washing, the styling, but what they still need is, I guess you could call it the human touch. So before you get your hair cut, they have a person who comes and checks you out, massages your scalp, makes a little chit-chat. After you get your hair cut, there's another person who comes over to tell you how great you look. It's completely useless. It's what they call perk employment. Touchers. But over here, this is what I wanted to show you.
He runs ahead, boyish in his eagerness, pulling at the weather tenting on a squat lump of a building.
Luke?
Tipper's not sure if she's charmed or unsettled by the way her cool seducer has become this gambling tour guide. But quick as an auto-driving car will switch routes, Luke reverts to his broody persona, hoisting up the slippery film of the tenting to expose a small, glassless window. Smooth as a burglar, he slides inside. A pale hand extends to help Tipper. She waves him away and lifts herself over. With the weatherproof shroud its owner has thrown over it, the building has taken on the dusty, almost sweet scent of a desert cave. Luke fumbles for her hand.
It's okay. My friend's got a unit outside, running a baffler on the AI alarm. It thinks we're weevils. Here.
A small spot of light falls on the dusty floor. Luke leads Tipper among shrouded furniture. She lifts up a flap and sees 30s-era fractal construction, fake wood printed in sea anemone patterns, charmingly retro.
This place.
It's a club.
Luke has a beer in hand. He pushes one toward Tipper. She sees no fridge, but there's a crystal-insulated cooler lying lopsided on a couch. Luke's flashlight whips over dust, reed tables, a little riser of a stage.
It used to be, anyway. I've been hanging out here since it closed. They used to have music on weekends, comedy 4 nights a week. This was where my mom got started.
And she was... Luke pulls out a porto book, thumbs in a name, tosses it over.
The book's an old model. No frills, just e-paper.
Tipper flips through the document, which appears to be the career summary of a rather unremarkable actress. If this is Luke's mother, she doesn't seem to have gone very far. The credits paint a picture of a low-tier thespian scrounging for work. Babe, it's okay. Uncredited. Monster matriarch. Voice. The long and short of it, unreleased. A shout jerks Tipper's head up.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Luke is on stage, addressing a phantom crowd, swinging an old mic stand.
Tonight we have a real fine treat. Get ready for the boundary crossing, risk-taking, no-holds-barred comedy of Lucas Avero.
He grins. Comedian style. Tipper shakes her head as Luke mugs his way through a spoof of stand-up.
Okay, guys, seriously. Seriously, people.
Suddenly, he is serious, holding the stand at arm's length, making it clear there's no mic in the grip, no lights, no crowd. His performance consists of a single line.
What the fuck happened to us?
Luke scans the room.
Tipper, you out there? You hearing this?
He hops off the stage.
I mean, it was supposed to be the one thing we'd always fall back on, right? The one thing they could never take away from us.
He holds out a hand. Tipper sees what he wants, gives him the porto book. Luke shakes it like a magician. The pages flap out into a single stiff screen, magazine size. He loads a video. Seeing the image, Tipper can't help but laugh.
There it is.
Luke's watching over her shoulder.
Endgame.
The video, sensing her attention, begins to play. It's like a fragment of Tipper's teenage experience, shaken loose and tossed up into the present. A scene from her 16-year-old self's favorite cartoon show. Darley the Penguin is more or less the sum of everything a modern girl experiences. A tad overweight, insecure about her body, dirty-minded, ambitious, loyal to her friends, fiercely smart, intermittently sassy, with a bizarre little mop of biologically incorrect hair. Who in the world wouldn't love Darley? This clip is from one of the early shows, when Darley was trying to make her way in the modern office. Here, Darley's talking to her polar bear boss, Dexter, and it seems that during a strategic planning meeting, when Darley self-deprecatingly referred to herself as a big bird, Dexter's response was, well, the plot doesn't really matter. What's funny is Darley's attitude. The way this CGI penguin somehow captures everything crazy about being a human being at the start of the 22nd century. Darley has a whole bundle of oddball tics, spelling out dirty words, or more often misspelling them, flapping her wings and squeaking like a kazoo, tapping her forehead and reminding herself, "Penguins are chill, Darley. Penguins are chill." Sometimes when things get really crazy, Darley'll dive to the floor and slide on her belly out of awkward situations. It's all too funny. And Tipper's already laughing when Luke abruptly shuts off the playback.
Programmed.
He closes the porto book.
Every second.
Tipper's annoyed. Of course it's programmed. It's TV. But Luke's looking at her like he thinks she doesn't get it.
You know how they write these shows?
He waves the porto book.
They don't. No human does. The scenarios are randomly generated based on trending topics. The jokes are crowdsourced. Thousands of one-liners are submitted, and the producers pick the best ones. And the characters? They're AI. Your Darley? She's a program. Gestures, catchphrases, even the voice. All coded, trained on test audiences. It can even improvise.
Tipper sighs. She knows this. Everyone knows this. It's like kayfabe. You know it. You don't have to harp on it. But guys like Luke always seem to overexplain.
My mom?
He turns to the stage.
This is where she did it. Up on that stage, every night, trying out her jokes, trying out her voices. And for what? To create an act, a persona. And that would be her product. That would become her shtick. This?
He waves the porto book.
This killed all that. Why? Because guess what? That mysterious allure, that human appeal, all those things a performer is supposed to have, charm, gravitas, charisma. Turns out, you can simulate all of it, no problem. Because that's exactly what a shtick is. Predictability. Routine.
Tipper wonders, what do you say when you see the point someone's trying to make, but don't quite see the point of making it? She reaches for his hand. Luke doesn't even notice. He's too intent on striding among the tables, kicking old beer cans out of his path.
So there it is, folks. End of the road. Muscle, skill, brains. The one thing left, the one thing we thought we could always rely on, was personality. Our wonderfully human, charming imperfections. Well, here you go. Darley the penguin is more charmingly fucked up than someone like my mom could ever be. So it's over. Gone. We've cleared the last hurdle. We've finally perfected imperfection.
He points at Tipper's nose.
You see what you've been doing?
Me? It's the first time Tipper's spoken since entering this shrouded place, and her voice sounds weird for such a haunted scene. Bold, young, strong. Luke comes toward her. Without thinking, she holds out her arms.
Your boss, your friends at the fair. You know who you people are working for?
He dodges her embrace, counting on his fingers.
You don't own the rides. The company owns the rides. Traveling Troupe, a subsidiary of Seven Star Entertainments. Who owns the company? The shareholders own the company. Who are the shareholders? Funds and banks. Who are the funds and banks? Who else? They're a bunch of computer programs who sometimes hire human beings to go to meetings. And guess what? The hair salons, the stores, the factories, the Air Force, the same programs are running it all.
He taps his nose.
Follow it back, Tipper. Follow it back.
Tipper finally gets a hold of him, grabbing his wrists, which feel surprisingly thin and frail. Guys like this always shock her with their fragility. She holds him by the collar, putting her palms to his cheeks, calming him. I know, Luke, okay? I know.
And where does it start?
He's still looking away.
It starts with you, Tipper. A friendly girl, leading little children up to a big monster, saying, don't be afraid, it's your friend, it's okay.
She can't stop thinking of her brothers, how they always used to talk this way, taking her out to the barn to show her their projects. How one day they said they were going to change it all, bring the whole system crashing down. Well, something changed, all right. Tipper doesn't remember what exactly set it off, but her father never needed an excuse to fly into a rage. He was at his worst that day, stomping around the house, kicking anything that would break, and eventually he made his way out to the barn, throwing open the doors to expose the projects of Tipper's brothers, the car engines, the game tables, the magnetic and chemical experiments. As he worked his way through the collection, sometimes with a hammer, sometimes with his hands, he shouted out his verdict.
Useless. Ridiculous. A fucking waste.
What made Tipper tremble as she stood there in the door, what made her shake with a rage that terrified her, was the way her brothers stood back, passive, simply watching the destruction. Their constructions, their creations, their hobbies, all crushed. Complexity pounded to scrap, sacrificed to their father's aimless anger. And they accepted it. Like biblical sons, they bowed under the patriarchal judgment. Even to themselves, they were nothing, in the end. Useless, ridiculous, a fucking waste. It's like Tipper can see them all right now. The angry boys and the angry girls, the mothers and fathers who'll never work again, the manuals and the doctors and the mathematicians scattered all through the lonely fringe towns. She holds Luke by the collar, pulling his face toward hers. It will be okay, she whispers against his lips. It will. With instinctual ease, Tipper guides him. She doesn't push, doesn't pull, just leads him where she needs him to be, At one point, her foot skids on something, suddenly rolling, and she sees it's the flashlight dropped from his hand. By its wheeling light, they find their way to the couch. Tipper pats the sheet-covered cushions. The crystal-insulated cooler falls to the floor. The crash only adds to her urgency, a brittle music of glass bottles in the dark. She lays him down, climbing onto his hips. I trust you, Luke. I trust you. Even as she's thinking this, Tipper knows it's not quite right. What she trusts, what she's bending to kiss, is the feeling inside him, the hurt and need of a boy who's seen everything smashed, abused, stolen. Everything he's worked for, everything he loves. From the highway, the fair looks like a true menagerie. Monstrous heads and swinging tails cast wild shadows against the gaudy lights. The people register as no more than specks. You can almost imagine that history has run backwards and that they've all come back again, the lost and majestic monsters, the prehistoric beasts. Luke pulls deftly off the road, guiding his truck through the auto-driving traffic. Hello, Tipperley Smith, flashes a sign. Welcome to the Traveling Troop Fair. The Traveling Troop. The Metal Demimond. Call it what you will, the fair will always be a welcoming place for the wandering, the footloose, the cast aside. We forgot to change the login. Tipper taps the screen as Luke steers through the gate. All the monitors will think you're me. Normally, it wouldn't matter. The car would detect the driver automatically. But this automatic function, like most of the others, has been shut off. Luke doesn't care. He's been driving all night with his eyes on the overheads, impassive and silent, expertly imitating a machine. Now he steers past the public lots, onto the service road beyond the gates. Tipper looks out the window. Warning, flashes a sign. Restricted area, staff only. Warning, warning. Then, welcome, Tipperley Smith. You're not supposed to be back here. It's okay. He keeps his eyes on the screen. I'll take you to your trailer. An almost painfully gallant gesture, it seems to Tipper. After tonight, they're unlikely to meet again. More lonely traveling for her, more lonely ranting for him. But he can do this for her, if nothing else. He can drop her like a gentleman at her front door. The trailer flickers with LED light. Susie must be waiting up. A little distance away, Snake lies curled under lamps, dormant for the night. Luke parks at the fence, lets the truck idle. The engine, built for all-night driving, hums softly in the dark. Well, he reaches for the dashboard. Guess this is it. It's hard to say why, but Tipper feels almost panicked. Are you... I could probably get tomorrow night off. I don't think I'll be around. He makes it harshly final. And like that, Tipper realizes that this is what he wants, what he's always wanted. Not to kiss her, not even to sleep with her, only to have given her the tour of his life. So that's it? She tries to keep her voice from shaking. That's all we're doing? Tip. His hand twitches on the dashboard. You drive me around, you show me your life, you put on this big demonstration. I mean, what was all this about? He doesn't answer at first. His face is answer enough. Well, he sighs. I guess I wanted you to know. To know why I'm doing what I do. So you would understand. to under...
Then she sees where his hand is resting, hovering on that unremarkable black button, the one she almost pressed before, the one he warned her never to touch.
Luke!
Even before it happens, Tipper realizes he's right. He's done it, achieved his goal. In a way, in a hidden, angry part of her, she does understand. The first ride to go is the haunted house. A spook on the roof, a winged gargoyle, jerks and lurches like a drunken suicide. It quivers, stiffens, tumbles off, crashing to the hard-packed gravel and snapping a wing. The doors fly open. A lizard man staggers out, lashing a rubber tail, clawing the air. Two people follow, a pair of teenage girls screaming in genuine terror. It's pandemonium. The windows opening, the walls shaking, shrieks and howls from every corner. The spookbots run riot and jump from the rooftops, even punch holes in the MicaCore walls. A kid staggers out with one of the cannibal babies clamped like a monkey to the back of his head. From the central courtyard, the morbid eye ascends, puttering on its failing jets, sailing away over the gables into the night. Nearby, the Screamosaurus is lashing its tail, tipping over souvenir stalls and a barbecue stand. As the riders and operators shout and flee, the ride shudders, tips, whipping its head wildly side to side. The abominable go-go-go man is pounding dents in his chest. The land shark chomps earth. Octowhip reels into the midway, flinging out its arms and dispensing mayhem. With a screech of straining hydraulics, the Dementor sways and falls. The worst, though, is Snake. A salted slug, a suffocating fish, a worm under a magnifying glass. There's no comparison for the flailing of this great, fat body. The tail alone is a menace, whacking nearby trailers, catching the bars of fences and flinging them hundreds of feet. The big mouth gapes and gnashes. The googly eyes, ordinarily so jolly, are now the soul of anguish and fear. Even in 18 years of rough-and-tumble fringe life, Tipper has never seen such a display of agony. She's at the edge of the gravel. She must have gotten out of the car. Luke is here, beyond the reach of Snake's gyrations. Susie, Carter, all the operators, they've come out of their trailers, their private compartments, to witness this artificial Armageddon. What's happening? An operator from the Bear Jamboree, a woman Tipper scarcely recognizes, drifts by like a refugee. Susie and Carter stand almost perfectly still, only moving their heads as they watch. Tipper ducks into Luke's truck. She pounds at the interface, entering random commands. The car beeps. She hears a clunk. With Luke's hands clutching at her shoulders, she kicks out of the seat and marches around to the rear. The big storage compartment is popped open, exposing the interior. Tipper remembers Luke's description. A bed back here, internet, built-in fridge. The best game hookup you'll ever see. But it's no traveling rec room hidden amid the braces and padding of his cargo hold. Fighting Luke's hands, Tipper climbs in, scanning the jumble of wires and consoles.
What the hell? What is all this?
Tip. He grabs her under the arms. Tipper's been in too many sibling fights to let him get away with that. Listen, he pleads as she kicks him back. Don't touch anything, okay? It's too late anyway. She hops down from the truck and spins to face him, gravel spitting from her toes.
You planned this.
Luke's face is miserable but resigned.
You had me fix your car so it would be registered to me, so you could get it back here in the staff areas. You only did this so you could...
He doesn't object. That's the worst part of it.
hanging his head, staring at the ground. He can't even bother to tell her it's all more complicated than she understands. Sabotage. Everything, every event of the week begins and ends in that word. Sabotage. You shit! Tipper begins to pant. You piece of shit! She lurches away from the car, remembering Carter's words. Radio hacks, sophisticated methods, like the military uses on enemy drones. She can see now, it's not only rides that are affected. The local repair drones are sputtering into walls, dropping like addled moths from the sky. Tipper's own brain feels fuzzy, scrambled. She finds Carter seated in the dirt, vomiting into a tuft of grass. The apocalypse is winding down. A wall of the haunted house collapses, bricks and fake armchairs tumbling out. Snake is a twitching hulk. The joints of the skeleton snapped or fused, fabric flesh hanging in ragged swags. The image of death couldn't be more complete if it were a real dragon here, vanquished and moribund. Tipper approaches. A flame spits from the ride's battered head. Sparks begin to jump and catch. The gel-pack padding burns with an awful stench. Tipper, stop! A hand grabs her wrist. Tipper wheels around. Susie stands behind her, not crying, only watching as baby Snake melts into a greasy mass. Up the fairway, a siren yowls. The main emergency station is proofed against attacks, and the fire-dousing drones are already in formation, descending with jets and extinguishers and warnings. Keep back! Danger! Keep back! Danger! Susie! Tipper is surprised to see the older woman's face is unmarked by grief, as if Susie can't even quite comprehend what has happened. Susie! I'm so sorry. Tipper tries to say more, but she can't go on without sobbing or choking. Smoke spreads in a thin haze. As Susie's eyes track over the ride, the plumpness seems to leach from her features, cheeks clinging to her bones. Tipper turns, looking for Luke. Bad move. Susie turns also, seeing the truck. As for Luke himself, there is no sign. Oh. Susie releases Tipper's hand. Okay, I see. Yes. I see now. Wait! Tipper clutches at her hand. Susie, I didn't know, I swear. He took me out. We drove around. I didn't think he was... Susie nods dully. All right, Tip. Just give me a second here, okay? The haunted house is a crumbling wreck. Carter stumbles around it, wiping her mouth. The area is thick with drones and bots, most of them gathering around Luke's truck. As for Luke himself, he seems to have completely disappeared. Susie, you have to believe me. I trusted him. He never said he would... All right, Tip. Susie's tone is like the grating of a key. I see what happened here, okay? I get it. It's somehow more awful than being yelled at, this calm detachment, this sudden withdrawal. Because Susie has been through everything down here in the metal Demimonde. She knows what's what. And when Susie makes up her mind, there's no one who can unmake it. Tipper backs away, stumbling on stalled drones. Please, Susie, please believe me. But the old operator drifts away, standing over the corpse of her ride. Tipper finds that she's crying like a child, snot and tears flowing together. She wipes her face clumsily, vision blurred. Without thinking, she turns and runs. A group of teens trip by her on the fairway, one draped over two supporting friends. The crowds, already thin, are dwindling fast.
I'll find you. Tipper hears herself panting. I'll find you, you son of a bitch.
A ripped-off arm, part of the Dementor, lies like a fallen tree across the midway, repair bots swarming around it. Fairgoers circle like leaves in a stream, some fleeing, some gawking, some apparently aimless. Tipper remembers how Luke first appeared, one boy among many, a member of the crowd.
She'll get him. If security hasn't done it yet, she'll bring him in.
Her stomping boots take her past the game stalls, through hordes of staring attendees. At the security tent, she searches the area. Onto the repair station, the prize displays, the main gate. Nothing. She circles back through the wreckage to the road, under the fence and out of the fair, to where squatters have set up airsats attractions.
Nothing.
Finally, Tipper takes her hunt to the limits, the public parking lots where it all began. And that's when she has to admit that he's gone. Vanished the same way he appeared. Another lost soul drifting through the fringe and the idle decades and empty towns. And she finds a fallen trash can and kicks it to death and sits on it and lets herself cry. When the sobbing ends, Tipper lifts her head. The fair is strangely quiet now. She checks for messages from Susie, Luke, the security team, but the whole world seems to have fallen silent. An eerie air of solitude hangs over the empty parking lot, and she realizes that out here, she is entirely alone, except for a host of watching machines. Yes, they're all around her. Rabbit Run, Wheelie Dealie, the Speedy Demon, and the true relics, the old classics. Tiger Tiger, Tentaculous, the Great Jim Jamboree. The orphans bow over her with solemn stares. With surprise and delight, Tipper realizes that they must have been out of range, spared the effects of Luke's scrambling radiation. Rabbit Run sends out a bouncing bunny. It cocks at her a velveteen ear. Tiger Tiger burns with a welcoming light. A tap on her shoulder makes Tipper jump. She sees Tentaculous grinning down at her, giving a slow wink of its huge eye. She stands and walks through this forest of the forgotten, this cohort of the estranged. The rides all vie for her attention. Come take a run with the racing rabbits. Are you hunting the tiger, or is he hunting you? It's more than a monster. It's Tentaculous. Without operators, these machines have to fend for themselves, begging for riders, attention, trust. Tipper works her way deep into the crowd, wondering, hoping. She hasn't memorized every ride in the fair, which sometimes switches units between stops. An old ride, a small ride, an obscure ride, might just have escaped her notice. It's possible. And as she rounds a corner and sees what's ahead, the thrill of discovery thunderbolts through her heart. Approaching the gate, Tipper hears a ding of greeting.
Don't be afraid. Step right up and meet the gentle giant.
It's smaller than expected, a mere runt compared to the mighty Screamosaurus. It's also the cheapest ride Tipper's ever seen, no more than the cost of a soda deducted from her account. Everything looks as Susie described, the plastic ball, the gorilla-like arms. The seat smells musty and old. A click of a buckle, a tightening of straps. No protocols now. No humans at all. When the ride confirms that she's secure, up she goes. The giant's hands hold the sphere without a tremor. Like a flea in a soap bubble, Tipper slowly rises, though it seems as if the world is dropping away. A twist of the giant's hands, and she's facing the fairgrounds, held aloft over the robot's head, looking down on this strange little kingdom of wandering monsters and carnies and kids. From up here, the rides look like the toys they really are. The corpse of the snake, a frail black curl. The haunted mansion, a crumbled doll's house. Away beyond the dirt and brush, far down the highway, are the scattered fringe towns, the strange blue shapes of the moonlit desert. And farther off, in some smattering of lights too remote to see, the home that Tipper has left behind. The great hands move. The ball slowly spins. Tipper looks down into the face of the giant, who gazes up, solemn and intent, as if trying to decide what kind of fairy he's captured. Does this little creature sting? Will it bite? Is it dangerous? His eyes, as Susie said, are a somber green. And Tipper holds their gaze as she undoes her harness. Her feet move silently on the padded floor. When she presses her hands to the plastic shell, a trickle of air runs past her palms, and she realizes the whole plastic sphere is pierced with tiny holes. The metal face looms below, larger than Tipper's entire body. It's proudly masculine in appearance. Big square jaw, a prominent brow, and oddly reassuring. Here it is, what Susie fell in love with, a great gentleness born of great strength. Spreading her arms, Tipper rests her weight on the plastic, looking down into eyes that will never look away. And she feels almost joyful now, almost loved, as she reflects that, for this unbearably brief moment, she is undoubtedly in good hands.